For February the 14th, 2014, we talk about the Flappy Bird fiasco, Jazz Punk, and we do a free play multiplayer segment. Welcome to the 51st Level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
My name's David Meissman.
Jesus Christ, David.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And this is The Level, where we intone things real weird. What? What's happening? Oh, well. It's too bad we can't pause and do another take. But we soldier on. This is a podcast for people who love video games. Oh, boy, I was about ready to go into another loop. I was about to say, I'm your host, Cole. This is a mess, you guys.
This is also a podcast for people who love first takes.
Oh, yep.
They call us The One Take Level.
Yep. Oh, man. Synergy between gags on so many different... my head
hurts. Bigger than any of us now.
Wheels within wheels. So, I don't know. I don't know what to intro us on. We're on SoundCloud. You guys know that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I just don't know what that means. Are we on the cloud?
Yeah, we've always been in the cloud because of the way we're hosted. But it's not by me.
Because Cole gets high all the time for
this show.
Cloud
Mysterio. No. But like SoundCloud, it's like this online audio sharing service that is meant to be social and embeddable and stuff. And in trying to give people more vectors to encounter the shows, I've been uploading every single episode of every show on the network to it and putting in the requisite information and stuff. I've been real busy, you guys. Like I don't know what's happening to me, but I really need to sleep so bad.
Nah, you should upload
There'll
more
be
shows.
Plenty of time to sleep when you're dead.
It's the first casualty of productivity, sleep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, well. But if you want to go there, the username is DuckFeedTV on SoundCloud, and that is us. So that is kind of a front-loaded plug. But I've spent a lot of time doing that, you guys. Do you want to know how many hours of the show we've put out?
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So this is just like edited and, you know, released material. This isn't, I figure for edits and, you know, the actual recording time and stuff, we probably want to take this number and at least double it, maybe 2.5 times it. Mm-hmm. But 96 hours, 13 minutes and 46 seconds. Of this show.
Wow.
Last 3 episodes?
No. that's all 50 and the bonus episodes.
This surprises me. I've spent more time playing Dark Souls than I have doing this show.
Really?
Yeah, I've got over 100 hours in Dark Souls.
I suppose.
The real question is has Cole spent more time talking about Dark Souls than you've spent playing it.
I haven't uploaded the Bonfireside chat stream yet. I don't think so, because we only had like 15 episodes of that show dedicated to Dark Souls, and like really I only had like a 5 episode span on the previous show DTR talking about it like at any amount of length, and offhanded references probably add up. But I think that across my different playthroughs, I probably have about like maybe 130 hours of Dark Souls time in.
Hmm.
So
I was going to say whatever time you talk about it on Bonfire Side Chat, multiply it by 2, maybe 2.5 for the other podcasts that you're on.
Yeah. Oh, man. We're going to have some serious talks about what happens when Dark Souls 2 comes out.
Oh yeah, that'll be, you'll just disappear into a black hole for a couple weeks.
For that week, I've already got it all planned out. Like what's gonna happen for that? We need to have it beat within a week. So,
whoa,
yeah, getting aggressive with it. We have to ride that wave, you guys. That's gonna be a huge huge popularity surge for the network. Dark Souls 2 is going to be on the tip of everybody's tongue, and they're gonna want to listen to it.
So you're going to try to beat it in a week so you can talk about, but you're not going to put up like a whole slew of episodes on it for.
Oh, no, no, no. So what okay. it's going to be, we talked about this in the most recent episode of the show. No, we're Gary and I, we just need to beat it so when we play it for the show, it's not like our first rodeo. Right.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So it'll be like, you know, beat it, like maybe get pretty far in the first like week and a half, something like that, and then like go into it in depth in the, you know, for the bi-weekly episodes. So
gotcha.
See, I want you to beat it in a week and then let us tape you being incoherent and sleep deprived.
I know. I mean, I've already made arrangements to do it in a healthy way. So
see, but that's no fun.
Well, I'd rather not. okay. My qualifier helps it, but I'd rather not, like, you know, cut years off my life by trying to beat this game, for a couple thousand people on the internet, you know? Like.
But it's on the internet.
It is. But all anyway, right. that is plenty of intro about a show this is not. However, this show that we're going to say, I'm going to say maybe a little bit of a short episode. Who knows? Although the multiplayer responses are rolling in. But we're going to talk about a little bit of news. We're going to talk about some games we've been playing. And then rounding out with one of our beloved free play multiplayer sections. So let us get going with
the brief.
But it's time for the brief, where we talk about things that are happening in this world around us. Do you guys mind if I get us started? Because I want to talk about some birds.
No, do it.
Yeah, yeah. So you guys
said.
Okay, I'm going to put a marker on that because I don't want that shit in my show at all, David.
Okay, now we got to wait another 5 minutes while he does it with his mouse.
Yeah. No.
You should take that out, but then leave you saying that you don't want that shit in your show. And just leave it a mystery.
Yeah. Yeah.
What
no.
could David have said?
I don't. Nobody knows. But what you just said, Ben, is exactly what I'm going to do. So. So we're talking about birds. No, specifically Flappy Birds. Did any of you play that while it was on the store?
Nope.
No.
That's gonna
because I saw a video of it, and it's like, who cares?
It's okay. So this is the weirdest news cycle. So this was everything that everybody was talking about for a day, and then the next day, everybody on Twitter was like, oh man, this guy really seems to be upset. Then the next day was he's pulling it from the store. 2 days later, down from the store. Day later, I pulled this from the store because it's an addictive product.
Yeah.
So this guy, his name is Dog Nguyen, and he is an iTunes app developer based out of Vietnam, and he created this game called Flappy Bird. Which I downloaded and played. It's on my phone, which makes it worth thousands of dollars. For some reason, I'm not even sure.
Are you getting in on that?
I don't know. I don't know. I think that if I needed to sell this, I would also have to give away all my like personal information, because if you wipe it, you can't just wipe everything and make it a Flappy Bird machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I played it. Like it's kind of fun. Like, you know, you're this bird. You know, here's what it reminds me of. It's like the speeder bike levels in the Game Boy version of Battletoads, where the you're trying to navigate these gaps and these pipes that are kind of like flying at you from right to left. And you know, you press, you tap, and then he does a little flap, and touching any surface causes you to fall to the ground. And it's incredibly difficult just because like your hitbox is gigantic, and you know, just it just doesn't control well. But it has that nice little addictive tight gameplay loop where you just play until you get on a hot streak, right? So it's mm-hmm. like gambling, really. I think my highest score on my iPad was like 24 gates cleared.
Oh, wow.
Something like that.
Weak sauce. I got 29.
Oh, fun. No, I wasn't even like
I got
proud of it.
Over 9,000.
Well, so this guy was making like $50,000 a day off of this app. It's free, but it has, you know, the little iAds on it, and it was like number one ranked. And like he started pitching a fit because people were harassing him, as people do on the internet with game developers, right? And this guy didn't really put himself out there. It was just like, I'm a dude who made a thing. So it wasn't a Phil Fish kind of thing where he made a movie about how awesome he was as an auteur, right? And so he says, hey, guys, I can't take this anymore. Press people are overrating this is the success of my games. It is something I never want. Please give me peace. He says, it's not anything related to legal issues. I just cannot keep it anymore. The legal issues thing related to the fact that the pipe icons are suspiciously similar to the pipe icons from or graphics from Super Mario.
By which you mean identical.
Yeah, the shading is different, but that's
technically, legally not identical.
Yes, legally distinct from
the best the best type of right.
You know, everything is everything is a remix, right? And so that's what I tell the police who shake down my stand of bootleg DVDs in Chinatown here in Cincinnati.
Well, I mean, just be Shia LaBeouf and say it's
What I was about to say.
It's commentable.
Have you followed that? Sorry.
All that I know is he apologized by hiring a skywriter to say, I'm sorry, Mr. Writer, over his own town and not the town where the writer lived. so that the most important person, would see it.
There's also the thing where his first apology was also plagiarized.
Yeah, from like the first result on Yahoo Answers for that particular question. Like, is plagiarism wrong? It's pretty funny. But this guy, you know, like, we can probably argue in circles about whether or not, you know, this is quote unquote fair use, or, you know, pixel art has always been kind of based on other people's work from a long time ago. Right. But that wasn't the case. In a rare instance, I've been following this like crazy just because it like took place over the course of like 3 days. And that's as long as I can pay attention to something. Nintendo, of all people, who never comments on rumors and speculation, came out and said, yeah, we didn't tell this guy to do anything. Like, they even said, we don't do this. We don't say about a thing. We didn't shake this guy down.
We're not king.
Yeah, exactly. And so then he comes out and he's talking with Forbes, and this is either a shocking moment of, you know, self-awareness from a casual game dev, but he says, yeah, I can't have this out there because it's an addictive product, which kind of is corroborated, because if you do a search for like fuck you Dong Nguyen, or like I'm going to kill you, like, people are tweeting at him with death threats, saying my 109 gates doesn't matter anymore because of you. Rah! And people are like going nuts. They're paying thousands of dollars on eBay for devices that have this game pre-installed on it. And there's splashy fish, like clones are popping up left and right. But this guy says, like, my life has not been as comfortable as I was before. I couldn't sleep. Yeah. So like maybe this dude has a point. Like, he got too famous way too fast for a thing that he just like cranked out and made a bunch of money off of. It's either that or this is like incredible publicity. And it's gonna be up for $3 on the store, like, you know, like the return of the one and only true king, huh?
Flappy Bird Classic, do a new Coke thing.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That's good.
You were about to say something before I cut you off, Dennis. Sorry.
No, you're fine. It seems like, just if you look at what happened in writing, it seems very meltdown-esque. But I agree with you that he seems to really have his head on straight, and just, you know, whether or not the reason he gave was actually the reason, you know, I was uncomfortable with what was happening, and so I pulled it down, and that's a thing, and I'm not gonna, he doesn't seem like he's losing a ton of sleep over it, which I have to respect.
Yeah. No, it's like, this is my thing. Like, I can take it away. Like, make your own thing that's like it if you want to see it.
Which would not be hard.
No, because it's a very simple game. And that's kind of what hooks people into it, I think. But
the thing I don't get is why he didn't just, like, open source it and run, personally.
Well, because he would still, like, he would still kind of be held accountable for it. Like, I think that his...
Held accountable for what?
Well, no, just, like, people would still be like, oh, why isn't this, blah, blah, blah. Like, he would still, like, this would still be a thing that he made that was out in the world that people, like, had attached his name to. And, like, eventually, you know, in the next 2 or 3 days, people will forget this, and the assholes will dull down to a dull roar, right?
Right.
Yeah. I think it's just the attention, right? Like, all he did to put himself out there was put his name on this app.
Well, the next time he puts up a game, everyone's going to download it right away because who knows how long it's going to be out there for.
He already has, like, a bunch of other games. And that might be the, okay. that might be the publicity thing because all these articles are naming these other games of his.
I don't know if it's that savvy. That's the thing is, like, if this was some mega corporation that was, trying some shit like New Coke, maybe, but eh.
Yeah. No, I don't know.
I think the real takeaway message, which we're obviously not learning from, is never put your name on anything you put on the internet.
Well, shit.
Yeah, we're doomed.
We should stop saying our names at the beginning of the podcast.
Bleep.
Yeah, I'm serial killer. Hack the planet, you guys. Yeah.
Names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Names have been changed to protect Matthew Lillard in Hackers. But, yeah, Flappy Bird. So, I don't know. I thought about downloading Splashy Fish to see how it compared. Like, Splashy Fish is pretty funny because, like, it is straight up plagiarism because the character is a cheap cheap from Mario. Like, more like one of the fishes. He just has a little crown on him. for no discernible reason. It's a vestigial crown. And going back through our titles, to do the various things I've been doing with the network recently, like, we create so much incidental poetry with
yeah. Anytime I just want to feel happy, I go back and read our titles.
Oh man, they will outlive us.
Like Tennis Furia, what your kid's name should be.
Yeah. I realized that was an unintentional sequel to Tennis Furia, which is a really good episode of ours, actually.
Yeah, I'm trying to get my name in as many titles as possible. This is keeping score.
Oh man, it's a flappy fiasco, you guys. let's see here, Ben, what do you got?
Yeah, let me drop the article and the whatchamacallit. Yeah, so instead of ranting about something, I'm just going to cite somebody ranting about something, but it was something I didn't know about. So I read a Reddit article about somebody talking about Plants vs. Zombies 2. And they were talking about one of the mechanics of the game, which I was unaware of, the fact that they introduced a pay-to-play element in it. Mm-hmm. So for anybody who's played the first one, there are lawnmowers in the beginning levels as kind of like a safeguard to the house. It's basically like a tower defense game if you haven't played this before.
Yeah.
So if a zombie or bad guy gets to the house, you have like kind of one free save or whatever. Well, apparently in the new Plants vs. Zombies, those are only activated by money. So what? You get 5 free to start with, but once they've been used, you have to pay with actual money to get them back. Even if you go back and like replay a level that you've already beat, or like even if you. So apparently it's something kind of insidious that EA might have worked into the game.
Yeah, but
that sounds very conspiracy theory esque. So.
Well, this is it's like Lenin said, you look at who's going to benefit, man. And I don't know how conspiracy theory-esque it is. You're out of your element. No, but like, I don't know how conspiracy theory is. Everything about that game is, predicated on the idea that they can make more money off of putting this game out for free and charging for the features rather than, charging you $10 for it up front, which is what I would like to do. And that is especially insidious because that is something that people have come to count on, at least I did, in playing the first game. Maybe it's noob mode or whatever, but like that very much changes the strategy of the game.
Yeah. Well, the first game has an achievement for ending a level by using a lawnmower.
Yeah.
Has it been said yet? Just this stuff is just horrible and bad, and EA should be ashamed. Has that ground been covered?
I think
your game is bad, and you should feel bad.
Yeah.
Is that? Does it need to be said?
I think perhaps maybe I don't know if we should devote a question to this necessarily, but I would like to know from like the viewers if there's a pay to play game that people like, or you know, like where someone's like, oh, that's a much better model than paying something up front.
I've heard people speak
Kingdom
in defense
of Loathing.
Yeah, but like the Kingdom of Loathing isn't pay to win. It's like you pay and you get stuff that may actually give you like a marginal benefit. It's more of a like support these guys kind of thing, right?
I think free to play is a great model. I just think the way it's implemented is horrible. I actually think the aversion to play pay to win is actually in some ways a bad thing, in that I think the ideal situation would be a situation where it was already assumed that you're going to pay at some point. You just
okay. Do you want to know what that point is? At the beginning, before you get the game.
But what I'm saying, what I would compare it to, as what I see as a successful free to play model, would be like sports. You know, anyone can start, you know, can start running, can, you know, start going to 5K, stuff like that. And if you want to really get into it, then you start buying, you know, running shoes and whatever other, I don't know, sports drinks. I'm not
yeah.
So wait.
But no. But my point is, like, I think part of the problem is the fact that there's the fact that pay-to-play creates such a, you know, kind of ends up either not working or creating an underclass.
Well, yeah, it creates an underclass, and also it's incredibly cynical, because what it does is it puts you in a situation where you will do anything. You'll press, like, pressing a button to win a game, like as you do to win most games, you have to press a button to get it. Like, all this does is put a button in there that says, hey, press this to win. Oh, and also, like, you know, like the key on that, or like the piano key in that Looney Tunes movie, not only does pressing this play the correct note to resolve the melody, it's also connected to not a stick of dynamite, but your bank account.
Yeah.
You know?
So question, I need clarity on this. Is Plants vs. Zombies 2 free?
Yes. So you go to the app store mm-hmm. because you're buying a product. You're buying a product, and you get it for free, and then you get in there, and it's like, okay, you can go and play, and you're on like a Super Mario 3 style world map, and you get to gates that require keys. And like the first couple gates, you get the keys to open up, and you can see at the end of those paths, you're opening up, unlocking different seed packets for new unit types, and also in the store, you can be like, oh, pay $3.99 to get this seed pack that has the walnut, the chili pepper, and the peppermint in it. And it's like, okay, cool, fine. And then it like quickly like ratchets up from that. And then
it's free, then they're fine. Like, they don't owe us anything. We don't like, they don't have to give us anything. They could put out a picture of poop and call it Plants vs. Zombies 2. Like, what are you complaining? If it's free, go do something else with your time if you're unhappy about it.
Oh, yeah, you can definitely still call it a bad game, right?
Yeah, and that's fine.
Ignore playing it. Like, so at this point, like, it's like what we're saying is it's a shame. It's a shame, you know, and it's co-opting, and this is a gigantic company that is, you know, by the virtue of this being out there and by the virtue of this probably making money means that there are going to be more beloved things. Like, look at Dungeon Keeper. That was another big high-profile thing that EA kind of came out and gave this same treatment to in such a way. They took, you know, a classic PC strategy game and they turned it into, like, okay, you're trying to mine this particular block of stone. you can either, you know, in the regular PC version, it was like, okay, this will be done in like 4 seconds. Go do something else. In this one, it turns into Farmville shit, where you put it on there. It's like, this will be done in 6 days unless you pay us $2, in which case you go. It was so bad that the original creator of Dungeon Keeper, Peter Molyneux, came out and said, guys, this is horse shit. But, yeah, you know, but they own it and they can do whatever they want.
Anyone who loses a bunch of money to that kind of model deserves it. Like, they don't owe you anything. They don't have to put out any game. The fact that you're you know, investing time in mm-hmm. it, maybe it's they should respect your time a little more. And yeah, it would be ideal if they had a better model for it. But like, they don't owe you crap.
They certainly don't.
I don't think that's the issue. I mean, I don't think anyone's saying they owe someone something or that, you know, anything like that. It's just, I think what people are saying is, you know, it's bad for the game, it's bad for the consumer. And I think those are legitimate complaints from a company that whose job is to make good games.
We've already established, though, that there is enough content in the world, and there is enough good content in the world, that you will never be able to feasibly consume it all.
Oh,
and so
for sure.
I can't imagine someone getting too angry about a game that is done poorly or a model that is done poorly when there's like 6 million other good things you could go do.
Oh, definitely. See, like you could always go walk in a park on a sunny day. To me, it's offensive on an ethical level and just on a do I want the world to be a better place level in like this categorical imperative kind of sense, where, as I was saying before, like if everybody did this thing, would this stuff that I love be something that I would be able to love anymore? Right. And like I think that where this is getting a lot of nerds, including myself, you know, riled up, is because they're doing this to Plants vs. Zombies. They're doing this to Dungeon Keeper, two games that exactly. are really good. And so, like, this hits home right now, and it's like, all I can envision is, like, this is a peek at the hellscape. And no, it's an implementation of the hellscape, because they're literally charging for gas, like, to run these lawnmowers, right? Of, like, being, okay, so you would have burnout, and it'd be like, oh, you're out of gas, pay $25, pin to the market rate in order to continue driving this way. And like, it's just kind of like it comes across as hostile, and it reeks to me of engineering this thing and making decisions about gameplay not in terms of, you know, what is most fun, what is the best experience, or what gets the best message across, and turns it more into how can we, you know, get more blood from the stone, right?
Exactly.
I think one of the problems with pay-to-play models in general is that you're putting the player in a position where they need to make a choice between paying money or to do better at a game, and like, that's not a fun decision to make if you're a player. It's much better if you pay up front, and then the thing you're thinking about while you're playing the game is, how can I do better at this using my own skill, you know?
See, I don't know. Like I said, I disagree that that pay-to-play is necessarily a bad thing. I think it's that coercive, you know, harmful, bad pay-to-play is a bad thing.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, most hobbies in the world effectively follow the, you know, the freemium type model.
I am so not averse to spending money on games. Like, you can look in my mint.com account and see what my budget is for frivolous things. Right.
Right.
It's just that, like, it is so engineered to be hostile.
See, that's the thing. I think the two big things, at least for me, are, you know, one, I think it needs to be set up in a way that's, you know, in a way that's rational, you know, in a way that's not just straight up, you know, a black hole of money. And I think the other thing is, I think if these were things where it was things you wanted to spend money on, people wouldn't have the problem with that. Hmm. You know, just like we've said in the past, like, people really don't have that much trouble with, like, say, like DLC until it becomes, you know, obviously manipulative, you know, like day one DLC type things.
It might just be go ahead, Ben. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I wanted to make a distinction between like pay to play and like subscription, because like I have no problem with like Walking Dead and the way how they release like a content periodically and you pay for it each time, but like, you know, the cost is up front and it's not integrated in the game and how you can do it the game.
Yeah. And so it may just be like a framing thing, and like I'm reacting poorly to the, you know, the idea of a big company, you know doing this, because like we're there the 1%. It feels gross that way. But I look at times when this has been implemented really well, specifically Letterpress, which is like games free, cool. You pay a dollar to play as many games at once as you want. It's like, yeah, I'll pay a dollar for this because I love this game. It's really good. It's a nice word game. Similar thing with Super Stickman Golf, where that didn't withhold any functionality. It was just kind of like, hey, I give you the option to give me, you know, 10, 20 bucks in order to get extra, you know, in-game bucks or whatever to use on the crazy bubble machine to get hats, right, on the gumball machine. And it's like, I like this game enough. I've played enough Super Stickman Golf 1 to know that I want to give money to this person and have them be successful. And so I bought $20 worth of the in-game bucks, even though I didn't have to, and like the hats were a bonus at that point. Right, so, and that felt like a contribution to a cause.
Continuing to play devil's advocate, and again, I obviously land somewhere in between your life, but we could just as easily read the same, you know, set of functionalities and go, guys, EA has done an amazing thing. They're giving the second Plants vs. Zombies game for free to everyone, and you can actually beat the game if you play well enough without ever giving them a dime. And you know, if you get to a point where you're stuck. Or, you know, if you just want to get through it faster, you can pay. But you get a full-fledged game without ever having to drop a cent. And I could take the same thing to the Stickman Golf and say, this is such an abusive model. They want you to pay to get a random drop. You're paying for a fucking random drop. So if there's one hat that you want, you have to give them enough money to get all the hats because you're not guaranteed to get it unless you use the gumball machine. And I think the key function there is what you said, who the money is going to. Mm-hmm. You like the person the money is going to in Stickman Golf, and you don't like EA.
Yeah.
Well, and I'd say that
if I could be the devil advocate's devil advocate, I think...
Angel's advocate?
Yeah, if I could be the angel's advocate, like that assumes that people want to play a game for free, or like that assumes that a person minds paying a cost up front. The idea, what you said about like someone like being excited about playing a game for free or playing Plants vs. Zombies 2 for free. And it's like, I have no problem paying money up front. I feel like it's a bait and switch to make it for free, but then have hidden costs within the game.
Hey guys. Did you guys hear? Disneyland is letting people in for free. No admissions cost, okay? Everybody can get in however much they want. However, they will let you pay 1,000 American dollars to jump to the front of the line. Now, you'll have, you know, get there and wait 7 hours in line to go on the teacups, right? But, you know, just as a consideration, they extended this courtesy to you to let you in for free. You know, you can get to the teacups, right? You can get to Space Mountain. Just going to cost you a G or two, right?
Yeah. I guess I'd have to play the game. And have any of us played Plants vs. Zombies 2?
Yeah, it's Plants vs. Zombies.
Like, can you beat it feasibly and, you know, without an insane amount of effort, without dropping money on it?
It does require a lot of effort, I found, just because, like, a lot of the plants that are most useful are hidden behind those walls. And so, like, it equates down. You'd love it because it would be like platinuming a PS3 game. Like, just like, oh, get this far without using pea shooters, and by this far I mean beat the entire game.
Yeah, sure. The game is a challenge run when it's free.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So like, and I would say the game is a shittier game when it's free, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
To step back, one other problem that tends to come up with, you know, kind of the pay-to-play freemium thing, just tends to be that It seems like a lot of times, I'm thinking especially like freemium MMOs because I play a lot of those, games that basically do it right will find some way to screw up, to use freemium to just screw everything over.
Mm-hmm.
So I particularly recently think of like the Neverwinter MMO is really, really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has a lot of great features. But the thing is, you basically, their crafting system ends up being, you know, it's kind of a refining system. You know, you need 10 of the base things, and then they make 10 of the okay thing, or one of the okay things, and then, you know, 10 okay things make one great thing, and so on, and each one has a 10% chance to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And you can buy things that, you know, that make it, you know, that guarantee success. And if you look at it, you know, that I wouldn't have a problem with that if it was like a buck or two, or, you know, say even like $10 to like get it. But to get like an end game piece of equipment for one slot costs like $80.
Yeah.
Yikes.
No, it gets fucking crazy.
Right. And see, that's my problem, is that it seems like no one who does this can manage to not do it completely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't need to be $80. And that's a little bit what I, you know, was kind of saying with some of the sports metaphor, is I feel like the problem is that instead of doing a thing where, you know, everyone who's interested is inevitably at some point going to spend a couple of bucks, it's instead turns into a thing where the couple of unhealthily rabid people who are obsessed with the game are going to spend their life savings.
Well, yeah, no, it's the 99-in-1 rule, right? Like, it's Sturgeon's Law applied to literally everything, because apparently that is the underpinning backbone of this goddamn universe, which is 1% of the people will pay for 90% of the others who don't, and, like, only 9% of the player base are actually carrying their weight.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
See, but I think they set it up that way.
Well, yeah, they write it out like that. Well, what you're describing about, like, you know, like, let's mandate that everybody carry their way through this, is you pay for the game before you get it.
See, but it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, that's a fine way to do it, but I don't think that's the best way to do it. I don't think it has to be that way.
Part of the
I think the key problem is monetization. The idea that you put out something really good without any idea how you're going to make money off of it, and then you make money off of it by making it worse.
Mm-hmm.
That's the horrible thing that we're dealing with. And Plants vs. Zombies 2 is kind of this gray area,
yeah,
where the first thing was a self-sufficient, awesome thing that mm-hmm. you paid up front for.
That was developed 5 years ago.
Yeah.
When the market was less cynical. Go ahead. The second thing is a compromised experience, right?
Well, the second thing is a pay-to-play or free-to-play, whatever, model that I would argue, having not played the game and, you know, being completely not an expert, but that I would argue you could say is pretty self-sustaining. Like, it's fair. And the gray area that we're in is that you're used to the first version of it, and there's a second version. I think the outright evil stuff is when they, you know, when they launch something that's free and great and then start imposing restrictions.
I don't know how sustainable it is to alienate your audience like that.
Well, yeah, EA has been crippled by the response to this, and they'll probably be underground in a month or two anyway. So
that's what we say every time. But yeah.
See, I'd say, I don't know, I would say the response to this, I feel like, is a good thing, in that it shows the system works, in that EA is a company that basically every game they make screws over the consumer. So I feel like the fact that people don't give them the benefit of the doubt is exactly what they should be doing.
So I've got 2 points here. The first is, part of me thinks that this movement towards, not this movement, like, you know, just like, it's like, oh, this crazy new fad of pricing games at free or 99 cents or get Candy Crush for free and cost you thousands of dollars. I think that that is like entirely to get like to cater to teenage kids, which, you know, they don't have credit cards or they're on their parents' dime, so they don't get it, which puts us entirely as, you know, mostly grown adults who have money to spend. Like, yeah, of course I will say, charge me $20 for Plants vs. Zombies because, you know, I have forgotten the days when I played Tibia instead of EverQuest because I didn't want to ask my mom for a credit card number and find the way to pay the $12.99 a month to play EverQuest. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so like that right there immediately puts this into, okay, so let's make this model as exploitative towards kids as possible. The second thing is we cannot discount the impact on the experience here. That's what we're all about. Like, I would say, like, as a network across the board, we're all about like what is it like to play this thing? And that gets right back to, you know, the question of monetization. I feel gross that we have Audible ads on some of the shows on the network. What I would rather do is have a Patreon thing for the entire network and set it up so people would give us a tip every time we put something out and get it out there. No Kickstarter, no begging every year for something. Just have a Patreon and say, like, you can sign up for this and press a button every time we do something. And that helps, you know, sustain the multiple hundreds of dollars a month that this thing costs, you know, all the time that I would do as a hobby to make people happy. If it didn't cost hundreds of dollars and several hours of, or not several, but, you know, upwards of, you know, like, let's say 45 hours a week to manage, right? So, like, monetization is so the key here. And, like, the thing that small independent people have to do is figure out, how do we monetize stuff without sacrificing, you know, giving people a good experience? I could put everything behind a paywall if I wanted to. Go to the store, get the new episode of The Level, $3.99, so-and-so. That's because I don't have the luxury to afford it. However, like, when a large company does it, it just reads as cynical and crass.
Yeah. Can I point out someone that I think is doing freemium right?
Go ahead.
Sure.
I think that actually League of Legends does a really good job of it.
Yeah.
And I think part of the big thing there is the fact that they planned around and people who are straight up free to play and aren't never going to not be free to play are very explicitly part of the business model.
Oh, for sure. They are because they set up League of Legends to be a sport.
Right. And I think that's the thing is I feel like I say this every time this is a discussion about these things, but the problem is people don't think. You know, like, you have to look at, you know, is this business model right for what I'm trying to do? If I go with this business model, you need to think about what role the people who are just doing free stuff have in your game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of games. You know, every game wants to be esports now that is an indie game, it seems like. So I feel like there's a lot of games that could do this. Call of Duty could probably do this and make it work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm wondering how apocalyptic the backlash would be if Call of Duty was like, okay, every prestige costs you $75.
See, I think that's the problem.
Prestige wouldn't be a big deal. You just level up to the next level and stay there.
right. But if you you want to go around that merry-go-round once more, then you have to pay for the privilege, right?
Got to buy the game again.
Pretty much.
See, I feel like that's the core problem is making it $75.
Well, yeah. But I mean...
That's just challenging people's irrationality. Like, there's no reason to prestige in the first place. Like, but yeah, that would be... yeah.
But what I'm saying is, like, I think it would be completely legit is if they said, like, every, you know, the game's free to play, every gun other than the stock one costs $1. I think that would be a completely legit experience as long as they set it up that way up front.
But that would lock out, like, four-fifths of their audience, which is people who are too young to have a credit card.
We're too young to have credit cards, are too young to play mature rated games.
This is true. This is true. Well, no, you have a 17-year-old. You know, he can't go get a credit card, or you can probably get a prepaid credit card. I don't know. Like, the rules that applied from when I was too young to do these things are no longer here.
I like the I can go to war, but I can't vote, or I can't drink a beer of the new generation is I can play Call of Duty, but I can't get the gun.
Exactly. Right?
I can't get a credit card.
I am weed for other people's ranking chaff. You guys, we have gone way too long on this topic.
Sorry.
It's a fun discussion.
That's fine. Like, and every time it comes up, I feel like we talk about the same things, and you know, it's fine. But I want to hear, David, do you have a story? Did you find one, or are you freeballing
it? I have something. It's, I think, going to be very short. Just, I'm going to drop in the chat thing and then just take a look at this.
Oh, God.
It's made by the team that made Sanctum.
Made what?
Sanctum?
Yeah.
Yeah, same team.
Is this an actual thing? Because the last that I checked... Okay, so we should probably say what the actual thing we're referring to is, which is Goat Simulator, where you play as a rampaging goat running around what appears to be a playground and parking lot and running into people.
Also, apparently, a new feature they have guaranteed, so this is going to be on the back of the box, you know, bullet point.
It's a BOB feature. Back of box.
Well, yeah. Well, you can stick your tongue to things and carry them around. So they've demonstrated you like licking a axe and then like spinning around in circles to just like hit people with the axe.
So at this point, like after we finished recording last week, I kicked myself for not comparing Octodad to a more casual version of Quap.
Yes.
Oh, I was going to do that, and I forgot. You and me both.
Oh, well. This was originally a video prank that was put out, Goat Simulator. I saw the video was based on, too, like an actual goat just running around making life terrible for people.
And, As they do.
Apparently, you can pre-order it. Like, the only thing about a goat that makes life terrible for people is looking at its eyes. Like, actual goats are sweethearts, you know? There's like,
well, except for the fact that they piss on their heads.
What?
That's endearing, you know?
Okay.
I like that the what? First feature the first feature for this game that the game calls out in its trailer is bugs.
They did that with Prison Architect, though. Any kind of like alpha funded thing, like the cutesy mm-hmm. new thing to do is to say, "Oh, you get access to plenty of bugs." Like, you know,
gotcha.
Like, oh, your prisoners will be on fire when they go to mess, and they're never not on fire. So, no two prisoners are not on fire. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, if you do something and you go to prison, I think you deserve to be on fire. And none of these tree-hugging hippie liberals are going to tell me differently.
Yeah. No, doesn't matter if it's triple murder or holding a gram of weed. I think you deserve to be set on fire in a concrete building. Amen. Yeah, Goat Simulator.
Who's smoking now?
Do you think this is the Super Bowl? See, that's funny because Super Bowl also means like a gigantic bowl of weed, but also mm-hmm. both of the teams in the Super Bowl are from states that legalize marijuana. Correlation?
Oh, yeah.
I'll let you decide.
I did not put that together. Maybe that's why the Broncos were playing so poorly.
Yeah, they legalized so late that everybody was able to get like drug insane in order. Yeah, everybody in Seattle
hadn't adjusted yet. Yeah,
yeah. Their cannabinoid receptors haven't.
Yeah, the home field advantage is just that, you know, the other team gets really hungry.
I suppose they're in the Super Bowl. Like, they're okay, so they're playing in the Super Bowl and they're also millionaires. I think they can swing the $35 for a pretzel, Dennis.
Well, playing is very generous in the case of Denver. Yeah. But
I watched the first, like, so I pulled out my aerial, all right? So I pulled out my little aerial and I put it on my television to have it, you know, playing in the living room. And we're talking about an event that is like literally 3 weeks old right now. And yeah. I'm not interested in viewing commercials because that is not a part of my life except for making them. And and like by the second quarter, it's like there's no point in fucking watching this. And I don't want to see the Red Hot Chili Peppers at all. Yeah. So. I can go to bed early tonight. Hooray.
Or you could watch Downton Abbey, which is what I did.
Oh, cool. Yeah. No, I think that I got like super drunk and played what game was that? Probably Sweet Home.
Nice.
Yeah. So Goat Simulator, go check it out. It'll be in the show notes. The video at least is very funny. Dennis, round us out. It's not twins, is it?
No, thank God. That was a genetic possibility. So
okay.
Well, her grandma is a twin, but no twins. The thing I am talking about does involve a baby, specifically Murasaki baby. I think I'm saying that right, Murasaki.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a game. It's coming out now. The reason I'm talking about it now is that they confirmed it'll be coming out in North America. It was first announced about a year ago, but I just wanted to bring it up because it looks super cool. Like the art style has this great pseudo pen drawn, not Tim Schafer, not Burt Reynolds.
Tim Burton.
What's his name? Tim Burton. There you go.
Tim Reynolds.
yeah, that guy. It's got a little bit of that look to it. You know, you're basically guiding a little girl through her nightmare.
Right.
Is the premise of the game, and it looks like a bit of a puzzle platformer with lots of touch mechanics and stuff like that.
Is indie game ergo puzzle platformer.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it also roguelike?
It's an indie roguelike survival horror puzzle platformer.
It's like 90% likely, but it looks really, really cool. And in the trailer I watched for, at least, made it seem like the gameplay was going to be equally as interesting. So, in the spirit of just calling out interesting things and games that I think will hopefully, knock on wood, advance the medium and you know do cool things as art. Wanted to call it out. So
this is fantastic. This looks like somebody would. It looks like something people would draw on their Trapper Keeper, like in ballpoint pen.
Yeah,
a little bit. Yeah, except you know, with a lot better character design than System of a Down logos.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they've said when it'll be in North America. But it will be in North America. So hopefully whenever it comes out, you should check it out.
I like her little heart balloon. that was literally all I was going to say. David, go.
I'm trying to find this. I did a Google search for Murasaki baby. All I found is Texas wants to inform me not to drink while I'm pregnant. So how is this spelled?
Murasaki.
Did you say Merkel Saki baby? Are you talking about my illegitimate Japanese child?
A super insensitive way to phrase that, David.
Merka.
Yeah, sure, respect.
I think you mean half Japanese love child. Okay, it's not a Saki baby.
Half child Japanese came love child. Place name of my love. Scott band. Did it.
Worked it in.
And Saki.
Cut, print, ship. No, this looks really cool. So I'm going back and listening to. So there's a podcast out there called the This Year Collection that collects the greatest podcasts and will pick like here is year 2007 of Yeah Dude, or here is 2008 of like the best moments of One Up Yours, right? Like these old podcasts. And I've been going back and listening to it, and specifically with the One Up Yours podcast, which I would argue probably is the podcast that got me into doing a podcast about video games. You are so, like, so Shane Bettenhausen, formerly of EGM, now of Sony, was such an unabashed Sony fanboy that, like, he would just come out and just say the craziest stuff about the PlayStation 3, because that was the new hotness at the time, right? And it sounds so much like you, Dennis.
Oh, no. So what you're saying is I'm going to be a global president of a video game company.
No, but like what it says is like you're going to be like head of indie developer relations of Sony in a year's time.
Yes.
It's just like the gypsy woman said.
Yeah.
You guys ready to end this segment? It's been going on for like an hour.
The segment? Oh my God. Yeah. We're still the first segment. Go, go, go.
The grind. It's called The Brief, and it's longer than most other podcasts.
You guys, it's time for The Grind, and we are super behind the bubble. We have to go so fast. I'm going to be such a hard ass about time on this. Who wants to
go quick?
Go, go.
I'll go quick. I'll go. All right. I beat XCOM. It's fine, but when you get to a point where you're stuck, build the Psy armor and equip one of your people with it. That way you can play the boss. It took me way too long to figure that out. So that's just a helpful tip. Yeah, it was fine. Whatever. I beat it. Now I'm going to play Last of Us DLC this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
That's on my horizon. I'm good. All right, next person, go.
Okay,
cool. All right, I'll go. I got this. All right, I played Papers, Please. Thank you, Cole.
Yes, it's a birthday gift.
Yeah, it's an awesome statement on dehumanization and an excellent study in like abnegation as gameplay. And then I went into work on...
Jesus, you're working in words that I don't know, Dennis. What?
Then I went into work on Monday and was like, oh my God, this feels way too familiar.
God, y'all up on this vocabulary piece. Shit.
Yeah. What's up now? No, I
he's gonna be a father. He has to step it up.
we don't have to completely rush through this shit. Like the XCOM thing is fine. Because that's all we've talked about for life.
We're in a groove here.
Okay.
I like the intensity. But the first thing I do on work every Monday is pull in the new data from the previous week and check it for inconsistencies with what I had before and look for outliers. And it's totally, Papers, Please. So I was like, oh my God. But that's what I've been playing.
Yeah,
no, I played Flappy Bird 2, but we already talked about that.
Yeah, the devil is literally details in Papers, Please.
Yes.
It dehumanizes both you and the people who are presenting this thing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's super good. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's I checked your wish list, and your wish list is woefully underpopulated. And I was like, oh, what game doesn't he have? Oh, this is a good game. Let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah. Cool. I'm very happy that you like it. Thank you. And it sounds like you're picking up the theme. So at the very least, I can say, yes, he did play this because he is saying the right combination of syllables.
Well, the other thing is it took me forever to figure out how to start.
So
the
you
line.
Would let him through the checkpoint.
Well, it's basically like a magic spell, right? You just have to say something that sounds correct for me to let you proceed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You click on the loudspeaker to start the line. That took me probably about 5 minutes to figure out.
Yeah, yeah. Are you playing that with a trackpad or a mouse?
Mouse.
Okay, cool.
I can't imagine playing it with a trackpad.
Yeah, okay, cool. Because I know you have a MacBook Air, and most people that I know who play MacBook Air, so fuck mice.
Yeah. I'm not into bestiality. How dare you?
Well, geez, though. Why would you?
Go so far off the rails?
I don't know.
Wait, where'd our intensity go? Intensity.
Intensity. Okay, self-reflection is antithetical to intensity.
Yeah. intervention.
But is that all, though? Papers, Please?
Yeah, that and Flappy Bird, which we already.
Yeah, yeah. I will say as I'm compelled to every time you mention something that has been done on Check It Out Comrade, there is a great episode about Papers, Please on Check It Out Comrade, which you can find here on the DuckFeed.tv network of podcasts and blogs.
I find that one's oddly appropriate for a game called Check Out Comrade.
I think it's because it's possible. I do not want to speak for either Gary or Nick, who are perfectly capable of speaking for themselves. But I think that there has just been this slew of Eastern European designed games in the indie space recently, and they figured that aesthetic was good enough anyway.
Which, David, I remember way back in college, you designed that video game with that aesthetic, right?
Yeah.
So. Yeah. We were totally into it before it was cool.
Worker and Parasite, dude. What the hell was that?
Have I said yet? I really want a shirt with like Gary or actually the other host. His name is escaping me.
Nick?
I don't. Yes. I don't routinely argue with him on Facebook. So I
yeah, Nick's a pretty chill dude. He's a pretty chill dude. So it's...
Okay. Yeah. No, I really want a shirt with like them just both doing like the Che Guevara thing, like you know, Beckley looking off into this, you know, sunset or whatever.
I could probably make that happen, like on a print on demand service. I just have to get them to send me pictures. The problem is with Gary's beard, like it won't fit in a frame, so it'd have to be taken from like 10 feet away.
You can't contain my beard.
It has to be like a pajama shirt.
It's a onesie. Why does that man's beard extend beyond your crotch?
Oh man,
that's pretty good.
Truly the beard is too epic for one shirt.
But. Yeah, no, it's pretty full.
It's like an I'm with stupid shirt, only you know with the beard. Yeah. Traveling onto the other one.
So I haven't cut my hair since I went to Portland. So it's like really long now. It's super long, and I don't think he shaved since Portland. So we're like doing we're doing pod bro. we're doing pod bro inverse head hair. I just kind of like, oh man, what's that? What's that tickling like the nape of my neck? Oh, that's my hair, huh? Okay.
I'm trying to imagine you with
like straighten it and have it be like halfway down your back.
It's not that curly, nor is it that red. I think that everybody is having a mass hallucination except me. No,
you just want it to be that curly and that red.
It's my most it's my most recent like Facebook and Twitter photo is me. So I took that picture with the Dark Souls 2 hood, like the knight hood. Mm-hmm. That I put up on the a couple of places. I was like, oh, I've got this crazy, you know, this crazy picture with me with like weird hair, and I was making like a happy, like a happy haha face, you know, because you know, I'm a happy dude. And don't laugh at that. Come on. No, and like I put that photo up, and everybody like commented like, hey, good look. Oh, you know, do you have some candy to like lure kids into a van? It's like, what? Like
what?
You can't even. Like, I don't know. Like I'm not like fully Kaczynski'd out.
No, I didn't think that at all.
No, it just looks like I've got shaggy hair.
You Ugh. Never go Kaczynski. Okay, I can't even pronounce that.
Kaczynski.
Abort.
Abort. Oh, man. Yeah, so Paper Flea is pretty good. Check out on this episode. You've already done that, so you're already halfway ahead. Also, the Check It Out Comrade about that particular game. Let's see here. David, what up?
I've pretty much just been playing more Fallen London. It's really, really, really good, although I feel like it being a game that's pretty much explicitly about the experience, I'm not quite sure what I can say.
Right. Well, it's all writing, right? So yeah, like, if you writing. Say, I love this thing, you're going to be spoiling a gag for somebody.
Right, exactly. I mean, I guess I can in very vague terms say I have, in the last week, I've escaped from jail. I'm researching forgotten text that simply reading it causes your hair to burst into flame. I'm hunting down a unspeakable horror from before time.
As you do.
Yeah, it's a weird game. It's a really weird game, but it's really good. I guess the only other thing, I reinstalled Black Ops 2 multiplayer, and I've been playing that some.
Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's weird. I'm actually really pretty good at it, which is weird because I wasn't the last time I played. Because
all the good players have gone to 3.
That could be. What I think it is I've noticed, immediately preceding this, I played a lot of Payday 2, which has no crosshairs. You know, it's all iron sights or guess. And I've noticed that whenever I do that, when I then go to back to a game that actually does have the little Amy X, I tend to do much better. So I don't know if there's a correlate or if there's a causation.
Interesting.
How bold. Not even a correlation.
Well, no, there's definitely a correlation, but...
Interesting.
Huh. I don't know. Let me see here. So, yeah, Call of Duty Black Ops 2. Are you at all interested in picking up any of the most, like ghosts or whatever, or are you just kind of going to ride it out?
Sort of. Basically, the situation I am is I won't buy Ghost for anything approaching full price until they actually make good on their promise of dedicated servers.
Right.
And they seem to have no desire to discount it. So, like, yes, it's a game I'm interested in playing. No, it's not a game I intend to buy because it's, you know, kind of going back to the pay-to-play thing. I don't want to support a manipulative, unhealthy for the medium business practices or gaming practices.
So I have a question about COD Blops. Are you playing the zombies at all?
I am not. I've never really gotten into that. I kind of need to go back and do it because, I mean, I know it's good. I think you even said this. You know, there's very much a learning curve. They kind of just drop you in there and, you know, don't really explain anything.
Yeah, like Dark Souls, you kind of need a Sherpa to show you what you're supposed to do in that game. And then once you get it, then it's kind of fun. So.
Yeah, I mean... And the thing that interests me is there actually is, like, a whole storyline behind the levels. Like, you know, the levels, the different multiplayer maps, you know, take place in a certain order. And, you know, if you get far enough in them, you know, things happen that actually do, like, you know, tell a story, which I think's interesting.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
But.
Yeah. Yeah. That is the most intriguing thing about that game to me, is the inscrutable mechanics of its multiplayer co-op.
Yeah, the previous game, the actual like single player storyline was really great. I've heard some good things about the single player in this game, but the portions I played were not particularly entertaining.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's, you know. That's not what people get it for, so you can't really begrudge them that.
Yeah.
See, it's... I mean, I completely agree with you. Like, several of the previous ones, I just never played the single player, like, at all. It's strange to me that apparently there are people that get it for the single player.
So this brings up it was a random outburst I had on Twitter earlier in the week, but it's when the Order 1866 or whatever that game is came out and said, hey, we're only going to do single player, and everyone was like, good, more games should only be single player, or more games should only be multiplayer. And it's like, that's not what you want.
So do you want to reprise the previous conversation, at least in terms of length, about the free-to-play stuff?
Well, not free to play.
So basically, you recognize that there's an opportunity cost to including multiplayer in games, right?
Right, but as we go towards like what's the ideal, and I'm not saying
totally like just my stance there, like I like The Last of Us multiplayer. I think that Naughty Dog is an exemplar of like how to do that kind of thing right. I just think that the emphasis there should be exemplar, and the idea being that like if you can make this like okay, so multiplayer in an awesome single player game is gravy, right? But like, right. It makes no sense to me that Dead Space 2 and Bioshock 2 have multiplayer. And I think that's what people are kind of reacting to when they say that. And like, obviously you're right. More good game equals great. But the idea that, like, you know, if they put out this compromised, that's the secret word of the day, compromised. Yeah. If they put out this like kind of crappy multiplayer thing that nobody's going to play, like, what did they sacrifice for very little gain from actually like putting that manpower into either making a better new game at that studio beyond this, or making the actual single player game better? Like, well, that opportunity cost, you know, becomes so important. And I think that, like, what you're responding to, like those people saying, oh, it's so great that The Order is only like focusing on single player, is like people who like recognize that, like, maybe it wouldn't be the best idea for them to make that kind of investment at the expense of the single player, possibly, in order to get this back of the box like bullet point. Right.
Yeah. So what I responded to was, you're like, people were cheering for the right result. Like, okay, good. Yes, that is, it's good that they chose to go only single player in a world of limited resources, but not understanding the line of thinking that you just outlined that goes into that being a good result.
Well, they also only had 140 characters to do it.
You know, I expect more from my Twitters.
Yeah. Economize. Use favicons. Like, do emoji count as characters?
Emoji, please.
What? Are you kidding me?
No, I have no idea.
Okay. I was hoping that nobody, which one of y'all dead motherfuckers knows how to pluralize emoji?
Wow. The thing I can't get over is some of the reviews I'll read that will basically say, like, oh, if this game was only the single player, it would be 10 out of 10, but the multiplayer sucks, therefore I'm only giving it, like, an 8 or a 9. It's,
yeah.
That's fucking bullshit. Like, and that's what's great about, like, what Polygon is doing by, like, bifurcating stuff out and, you know, like, even to the extent of, like, after this update, we are totally willing to upgrade our score. You know, or downgrade it, as the case may be. So, yeah, like, well, what you're talking about, like, newsflash, film at 11, game reviews totally fucking suck. So.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. I have mixed feelings on it in that, like, a game that's single player only, I'm much less likely to buy simply because either multiplayer or particularly co-op is so important to me. Mm-hmm. That being said, I don't have a problem with, like, a Bioshock Infinite or, you know, any of the great indie games that, you know, we've talked about. You know, I guess Dark Souls technically isn't single player, but...
Right. Yeah, so I totally am not discounting your point of view, Dennis, which is, like, if a studio is competent enough and has the resources enough, like, let's say, like, Ubisoft, they can throw a like, 700-person team at making a pretty good single player and a really good multiplayer, right, for Assassin's Creed, right? So, like if they can do both, Yahtzee. But like I love how you said
a really good single player, multiplayer and an all right, you know what I mean?
You know, I really love the multiplayer for Assassin's Creed.
Like, oh, it's great.
And I'm a defender of that series, right? Mm-hmm. But like, you know, like, so I totally agree. Like that, you know, that's Yahtzee. You know, that's both tits and a Ritz. But, you know, like, if a studio comes out and says, like, yo, we got to fight for our identity, and like, we want to put as much of our resources as possible and avoid the institutional cost that comes along with making a multiplayer version, like that, like that is kind of the pseudo political move that this studio can make. And like, that might be praiseworthy, which is, that's them acknowledging their limitations.
Yeah. Although I do feel like sometimes the political part of pseudo political can be the problem.
Well, no. Like, okay, so I don't think that the developers of The Order are coming out and saying, kill anybody who thinks multiplayer is good.
No, but I'm just saying, like, sometimes some of those, and especially with indie things, it gets annoying where it's like, oh yeah, games these days suck, multiplayer bad, we're really cool.
Right.
What the fuck world are you living in, David? Sorry. No, I snorted, which indicates a certain level of levity, but I would say that there are lots of indie games. Like, I look at Nidhogg, right? Like, some of the stuff out there, some of the stuff that's out there, which are focused around smaller, more intimate multiplayer kind of moments.
Oh, no. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm not saying that, indie games don't do multiplayer. I'm saying that a lot of times, whatever game design decisions they'll do, then when they're pitching them, we'll pitch them as...
Oh, they'll pitch them at the expense of something else.
Yeah, they'll pitch them as what we're doing. You know, real gamers want to play it this way, and everyone else sucks.
Yeah. Well, no, that is very clearly a no true Scotsman argument, and therefore should be discarded out of hand. But
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. So I think sometimes the resentment of this is either because a game company actually is doing a no true Scotsman, or just friendly fire from people being so annoyed at everyone that is.
Yeah. God, the internet is such a fucked up place. Like, it has ruined us. It has ruined us as people. Like, it kind of is like this weird cultural mimetic mutation. Like, ugh.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, man, I put up an article about life hacks on the company's blog. Like, I wrote it up. Did you guys see that at all?
I saw your tweet. I haven't had a chance to read the article.
Yeah.
Let me make a prediction now. It is a sarcastic article.
Well, why does everybody think I'm so sarcastic? I think that I am a perfectly genuine person most of the time. It is satirical.
That doesn't mean you're not sarcastic.
It is satirical, so I'm going to admit defeat there. But
the reason I say that is you're friends with Gary, and I don't think Gary could be friends with anyone who took life hacks seriously.
No. So, exactly. No, there was a period in my life where I took life hacks pretty serious, not super serious, but enough to there's a class of advice that is put out that entirely, paints you and encourages you to act like a total monster. as opposed to the life hacks, which are like, hey, maybe come up with this weird little way to generate passwords so you never forget your computer passwords. But this article, and I would encourage people to do this. I'll put it to look at this, A, because I wrote it, and because even though I write for a living, I don't put a lot of writing out there. So I'll put a link to the article in the show notes. But the last paragraph of the article proper, as opposed to what my company Epifio had to put in as like a disclaimer to say like, yes, he does not actually believe this, was in conclusion, with enough crafty forethought, you can live your life in a technological bubble, avoiding those nasty interpersonal connections that have plagued mankind for years. Remember, if they call you a narcissistic, shallow sociopath, you're doing it right.
Yeah. Oh,
true words have never been spoken.
Yeah. So I don't even know. I don't even know where that came from. I don't know why we got to that.
We are on our sixth tangent in a row, so I don't even know.
I think that means we're doing it right. So do you want to know what the title of that article is? Three weird hacks you won't believe work. Be sure to read to the end.
Nice.
Oh, that is something that I think I've said this before, but Gary pointed that out. I think on Facebook, and now I cannot unsee the fact that pretty much every headline anywhere on the internet is now that.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's like it is totally engineered to get you to click on a thing. Oh, and that's where it came from. Like, the internet ruins everybody. We have 140 characters to say, it's cool that the developers of this game decided, oh, we don't want to spend our resources to make a multiplayer, segment of this game, even though there are people who would like that. And if we had the time and money to do it, to pull it off right, we would totally do it because people would be happy with that. But let's focus and, you know, maybe revisit the issue later. Like, that is at least 1,000 characters right there, right?
Yeah, I think what you meant to say is 5 ways the internet ruins everything.
Yeah.
This will change the way you see everything.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'll do mine real quick because we are coming up on our self-imposed time where we like to stop doing things. Holy shit, you guys. What happened? Who is driving this ship?
We were doing so good the last couple episodes.
I know, right? So thankfully, I am played shit. But I will say that I played a good portion of the mission from... And I hesitate to say this title because, David, you're going to latch onto it so hard. Jazz Punk?
Nice.
Yeah, yay. Yeah. So, we're doing an Archer thing there, David? Or, sorry, Dennis? Which one are you again?
I was not. But upon reflection, I probably picked that up from Archer and then now just do it subconsciously as a thing I do.
Whoa. I need to put a marker there because... I just hit the microphone with my barbecue lighter. Okay.
What?
I use a barbecue lighter to light my candles around my house. I've got it at my computer desk because I have an apple scented candle lit here in my room because I like to. You know what? I don't have to answer. I don't have to answer your questions. What is this?
Go
a witch
on, slower, please.
I like assuming though that when you say an apple scent candle, you mean your room actually
it smells like apple
like
products.
The Mac store.
Yeah. Yeah, it smells like douche. No, it is indeed a 99-cent apple scented candle from IKEA that I have sitting here, which is burning really unevenly, and I'm very upset with it. No, so I'm going to exit that derail and go back into Jazz Punk is super cool.
Nice.
It's another entry in kind of the, let's call it the experience gallery genre of games. Like, it's a little bit closer to Gravity Bone and 30 Flights of Loving than say something that is more narrative heavy, like the Stanley Parable, but they're all kind of in the same boat. But I love the aesthetic so goddamn much. Like, it's so the entire thing is painted with this 60s Cold War mod vibe to it. Huh. And that, like, the intro is all crazy slick silhouettes and the music is all, as you can expect, kind of this weird beat jazz kind of sound. But once you get into the actual gameplay, so, you know, you're running around doing things in order to infiltrate in this first mission that I've played a little bit of. Most of the way through. I have no idea. It could be like Gravity Bone where it ends after the first mission.
Psych!
So whoop! Yeah. But you're running around doing these little like side quest things. I don't want to spoil too much of it because it is a very gag-driven thing. It is fucking funny. What I will reveal is like something that happens in maybe the first 2 minutes of the gameplay, which is you go to your dispatcher, like your commander. You know, it's your Bosley, right? Mm-hmm. Making references to stuff that was from 40 years before I was born. What? And he says, like, hey, you know, you've got this mission. Make sure that you take your adequate dose of mission cillin or whatever it is. And he hands you a prescription bottle of pills, which will take you on the mission. And also he says, okay, I'm going to go, but I'm going to be in the wine cellar. And then you, as you like maneuver your way around the desk to pick up his thing, you see that he just passed out under his desk. So the wine cellar is him just going into a drunken stupor under his desk. And it makes all the sound effects of him like walking down a flight of stairs that you can't see, but he's just down there with a bunch of bottles. it's all really funny. And the comparison to Gravity Bone and 30 Flights of Loving is pretty apt. So the character design, I can't quite decide who's a robot and who's not. Maybe the main character is not a robot, but everything that you see is kind of presented in this weird like a little Fisher Price people version of humanity. Like as like Weeples or like the Wee People. Think the cover to Diary by Sunny Day Real Estate.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing? Bueller? Okay. No, but it's like the little plastic people who have no arms, but they have faces. But they're like, you know, they've got hard edges to them, and they're very much like two-dimensional iconic figures that are blown out into 3D. And it has this crazy, again, I've been watching a lot of Archer, so I'm going to make references to this stuff, like crazy, like maybe the Cold War never ended kind of vision of the future where everybody might or might not be a robot. Kind of thing, like huh. and just they're like, there are side quests that make the main quest easier, and they're all pretty pretty funny, which are like you go around like the first one, again, this is all very early, you get a gun to zap carrier frequency pigeons, which are robotic pigeons, and if you zap enough of them, yeah, if you zap enough of them, you can get an informant to give you something, but also you get a bottle of pigeon pheromone, which you can just like spray at somebody and have pigeons swarm them. So the game just seems like this vector for gags, which I'm totally fine with because there's a lot of game to it, probably more game than Gravity Bone had, which if this is a fulfillment of that promise, I'm totally
fine. So it's longer than 3 minutes then?
Gravity, okay, benefit of the doubt, Gravity Bone was like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
But no, like the presentation is great. So like people talk and you can understand them. It's, you know, very heavily compressed. But like the text of like what they're saying is presented in front of them, kind of in this nice like Futura 60s mod font that is an object in front of them. So as they're talking to you, you can kind of see like this text as an object in front of them. And then kind of like in the titles for Quantum of Solace, the stuff that you're supposed to do, you can see in the world, like laid over the scenery that you're looking at.
Okay.
Wait.
Yeah.
Can you expand that as far as what they did in Quantum of Solace?
No. Just like the instead of doing like a title or a lower third to do a setting or something, they actually did a typographical design with 3D and motion tracking in order to make it look like the text, you know, explaining like, oh, this is in this part of Russia, you know, like in the actual scene, like it looked like it was part of it.
Sure.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Fringe does the same thing. Several movies have done that.
Yeah, it's real cool. Yeah. So it's like text overlays, but not overlays. They're actually like a physical part of the world and walking around these various
interlays.
Yeah, interlays. There we go. But it's fantastic. I feel a little goofy talking about it, you know, given that I played probably like 30 minutes of it before recording this. But I would say that, at least to me so far, I feel justified in having bought it. But I will buy the craziest shit ever. So, who knows?
Well, you might not buy the craziest shit ever. One of the questions might answer otherwise.
Oh, yeah. So why don't we go to the next segment, which is
multiplayer.
So it is time for the multiplayer, which this week is a free play segment where you ask us the questions instead of t'other way around. And I'm going to ask you, my dearest one of you, to read Jala's response.
My dearest, wow. Well, none of you are that dear.
My dearest, what are your guys' names again?
I'll start us off. So Jala asks, what in your opinion was the weirdest peripheral manufactured for a gaming console?
Weirdest. One of you should go.
So my answer for this is also my answer for Geolol's question, so I'm going to hold out until then.
I think it's pretty weird that somehow EA got me to buy like a $150 pro guitar controller, which like totally cool. Like it's a nice little MIDI controller and everything. Like it's pretty great. But yeah, no, like the pro guitar for Rock Band, pretty strange actually.
I've got one. This is more novel, I guess, but I remember buying a third party PlayStation 1 controller that the big thing was you could set it to like super fire mode, and if you held down one of the face buttons, the it would input it as like tapping that button incredibly rapidly.
Oh yeah.
And so it was like, you know, a controller designed for poorly designed games.
Well, that's been a thing since like the NES Activator, right?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know in the first Modern Warfare, that was they didn't have a cap on rate of fire for semi-automatic weapons. And semi-automatic weapons were inherently hyper-accurate, so you would just bind fire to the mouse scroll wheel and aim at someone and just flick the mouse scroll wheel.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. Yeah, so that's it's such a incredibly specific circumstance that you would need that for. And it was either – it was a switch, so it was all the buttons or none of the buttons operated that way, which I thought was really funny.
When I turned my hat, it – flips the switch.
Well, and it's so nefarious too. I mean, like, especially in the Call of Duty sense. I remember working at GameStop, you know, like around, like, let's say, like 2009 2010, I forget, time is meaningless. However, like around that time, like there were these companies, kind of these fly-by-night places that came out with like hacked controllers that were meant entirely to like increase your rate of fire and basically do these, you know, weird hardware hack key bindings for like Modern Warfare 2 or something like that. So that they could get this edge. And they would come in saying, hey, do you have the, you know, Goku 420X Sephiroth, you know, blah 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 controller. It's like, I'm sorry, no, like we got like Mad Cats and shit, but like, oh no, I'm sorry.
Did they come in like a trench coat and black sunglasses?
No, it was like stupid fucking teenagers.
In trench coats and black sunglasses, this was the 90s.
They're not pornographers.
Hey, are you cool, dude?
Yeah. Are you holding these crazy hacked controllers? Yeah, no, like those weird boutique things. Yeah.
I feel like the ability to cheat at Mario Party would definitely get me to buy one of those.
Or the ability to play a Mario Party without wearing a stigmata-like hole in the palm of your hand, which Nintendo had to do by issuing a glove so people could wear it while they played Mario Party. Yeah. So Christopher says, what is your favorite genre of food?
Pizza?
That's a tough question, I feel like.
Spicy.
Yeah, spicy's pretty good.
Is that a genre of food?
Yeah,
that's a
good question.
Well, lots of different ethnicities are known for their spicy foods. You know, you have your Mexicans, you have your Indian, you have your Thai, right?
Yeah, I guess lately I've been mostly cooking for myself, so I think I'd have to go with survival horror.
I don't know. I think that might be more sim style. So like I've said very frequently that like my if I were locked underground with an infinite supply of steak, almonds, spinach, red onions, and let's say, I don't want to say bacon because that's it, eggs, like all of those things, I could probably eke out something close to an existence and not get tired of it. Although I am a noted variety hound, so.
Well, I feel like eggs would be an advantage. Oh, we're tangenting again. Because, you know, there's so many different ways to cook them.
But it's still eggs. Like,
yeah, but I mean, like, you know, an Eggs Benedict is a lot different than a hard-boiled egg.
That is eggs plus accoutrement. Like, I'm talking about, like, okay, you've got, like, maybe hard-boiled, fried, or scrambled. Go.
Poached.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess what I'm saying is, like, I would do the Flappy Bird of diets, which is as, like scaled back as possible. But like, if I were to answer honestly about,
and then get rid
like,
of it in 3 days?
Yeah. No. But if I were to answer, like, honestly about, like, genre, like, haha, you know, different cultures, I would say Mexican. Mexican is real good.
Mm-hmm. And margaritas, man.
If I was saying, like, ethnicity, I would say either, like, Thai or very spicy Indian.
Okay. Yeah.
I would try and cheat and say Japanese because that could encompass, like, sushi, but then, like, burgers and other things.
It could encompass
hamburgers or Japanese?
Like Kobe beef.
There's
right?
Japanese hamburgers, yeah. And they're tasty.
Yeah. How about you, Dennis?
I stick with my original pizza, man. Okay. I wasn't playing.
Yeah, no, pizza's great. I just.
I guess I would say Italian if you had to bring race into it, but pizza is. I'm comfortable going as narrow as pizza.
Okay, yeah, you're as zoomed in as pizza, man. I
just love the way you say that, though. You're like pizza. Did I stutter?
I've got a friend. Maybe she listens to the show. I don't know. Hey, Jackie. But every year for her birthday, she does a Chinese buffet. I didn't go last year, and I never heard the end of it. I cannot stand Chinese buffet, you guys.
Really?
I love Chinese buffet.
You monster.
It's like it's like the foodborne illness circus.
Oh, amazing.
It's like, yeah, but it's that element system. It's that element of risk that...
It's that element of surprise. Which way am I going to die? Am I vomiting myself to death or by diarrheaing myself to death?
It's kind of like the much more American-like equivalent of like that Japanese pufferfish.
The fugu style?
People eat it because they're like, oh, this is almost poisonous.
Yeah, it's like, has this been fried enough or like way too much? Yeah, no, like I will bow down on some General Tso's that I have made in the safety of my own home. So.
I always felt bad, like if I ever become a warlord, I hope that the thing I'm not remembered for, or that the thing I'm remembered for is not like my cooking.
Well, no, like that was an American invention. Like it's kind of like, oh, this like weird spicy sweet chicken, go for it, Doc. Like it's pretty good. Yeah, but Christopher goes on and says, also, I played a few JRPGs over the year, but I've never been a guy who's been all in with them. I want to know what your favorite, or possibly favorite that isn't one of the more obvious ones, like Chrono Trigger / Cross, Final Fantasy, etc. Man, like, Chrono Cross ain't popular, dog. Like, I want to say that. Like, if I have to pick, like, a JRPG that I would, like, maybe die on that hill for is Chrono Cross. But I would ask you guys to offer your opinions.
I actually don't play many JRPGs, and I have played Chrono Cross. But I'm not very... I have played very few JRPGs, so I think Final Fantasy is, like, the only other one that I've played, so... Yeah.
Way to weaken my position. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But I'm not good to answer this question, so...
Yeah, I feel like...
Oh, go ahead.
I feel like JRPGs that are actually JRPG, you know, JRPGs, the genre, I've never really played much other than, like, emulating a little bit of, like, Chrono Trigger and, Final Fantasy. So, I'm sure there's one I'm missing. I liked the Secret of Mana stuff. I liked Harvest Moon. Do any of those count?
I would say so, yeah. Harvest Moon probably is a little bit more of a resource simulator, but I'm not going to invalidate your response by being pedantic for once. No. Earthbound. I would say, like, if you're patient, Earthbound probably, like, it's not so
that
obvious because there haven't been like 35 of them. but I would say that, like, if you're looking for something weird, and for something that has, like, great music and an awesome quirky sensibility that is different from other stuff you're going to see that is probably more prototypical of the genre, Earthbound is probably a really good way to go.
Did you catch the, I guess they had the anniversary, like, what, last year? Wired ran a interview with the guy who translated into English that was really, really interesting.
Oh,
did
wow.
you see that?
No, I didn't.
Basically, what came down to is a lot of Earthbound's humor is Japanese pop culture stuff. So a lot of his work was him just adding a lot of, like, semi-equivalent American pop culture references.
And it works. Because, like, it's just a couple of degrees off of probably what was intended. Like, it's
exactly.
It's so weird and so effective. Like, localization is a dark art. And, like, I respect anybody who does it well.
I think, if I remember correctly, the one thing he said they changed that was kind of significant was, I guess, the cultists in the original game were, like, running around in, I think it's like, white hoods.
Uh-oh. Yeah, no. So they made him blue, right?
Yeah, they made him blue and kind of, like, they kind of de-emphasized the whole death cult thing.
Oh, yeah, they made it more like the cult of happy happiness. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Which just creeps me out more because
So
this
good.
Is a Nintendo game after all.
Yeah, but it's like not. It's a HAL Labs game, which is kind of like the Kirkland Farms brand of Nintendo. That's so good. God, yeah. That would be my big reco. Dennis, did you say a thing or did you not?
I am ridiculously underqualified, but I'm going to say you should try Eternal Sonata because I've read about it and think it would be interesting, but don't have the time to play it myself. So, Chris, play the game and tell me how it is because I want to know.
Oh, fuck. This just brought it up. If you have like $400 to spend, Breath of Fire 3. Holy shit. It is so good. Like it's a soundtrack is one of the ones that's in my pantheon of like I listen to this while I work.
So, wait, why $400? Is this like
it's never been reissued because of weird like Black Magic copyright stuff. So, you know, it's not like Breath of Fire 4, which once was, you know, $800 because you couldn't get a hold of it. Now you can. But Breath of Fire 3 is in this weird legal limbo. And I feel so happy. Like I could probably part with a lot of my physical copies of games. However, I will think 4 times, maybe twice, about getting rid of my Breath of Fire 3 game. Hmm. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, so I don't know, but there, play a game for me.
Do it. and then write in about it. Like, if you take our recommendations, let us know. That is duckfeed.tv/contact. Ben, what's Geolaw say?
Geolaw says, would you rather be Mario or Sonic at the Olympic Winter Games? And then a separate question, what is the best game that you've played that is based on a real game or sport?
Hello and welcome to the level. That is for a couple of people. Most of you probably listen to this and also listen to an Indies Versus podcast, which you should be doing. So Mario or Sonic at the Olympics. Sonic? Like most Olympics shit is about running.
Mm-hmm.
I would go with Sonic because
it's the Winter Olympics.
Yeah.
I would go with Sonic because I recently found out that his spiral is the golden spiral. Like, so the way that is, his hair kind of goes back is supposed to be a golden spiral.
I don't know. I feel like I vaguely remember Sonic snowboarding in one of his games, so that would kind of be a thing.
Sonic 3, the entrance to Snow Cap Zone. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess. Yes, probably.
I want to say that an Italian won, like, women's slope style, so I'm going to go for Mario.
Okay.
Well, and I vaguely remember in Mario 64 a instance where you were like bobsledding on a penguin.
Oh.
And that would be awesome. And I think our recent Olympics has proven that bobsledders are badasses. You don't let a little thing like a door get in their way.
Or their climate. I mean, they're from Jamaica after all, right?
Granted.
Yeah.
So
sorry. Go on.
Oh, go ahead. What were you gonna say?
It's just because did you guys see that news story that one of our bobsled team members got like locked in his bathroom?
No.
And then proceeded to like break a hole in the door and let himself out.
I'm pretty frustrated by these like stories about like how unprepared Russia's hotels are, because even though they are pretty funny, they're also distracting from like, this is a crazy country that is like imprisoning and killing journalists.
Oh, see, I thought that was.
Oh, the bathrooms aren't that bad.
I know.
I have really enjoyed like the fact that the entirety of our Olympic delegation is gay, and the fact that, like, Germany came out with the rainbow, rainbow outfits, and all the countries that are just screwing with them.
Yeah, you know, Russia being a country that imprisons gay people. Good job, guys, by the way. Good job at that. Fantastic.
Yeah. You can build a stadium, but you can't build a hotel, and your civil rights stuff.
Your human rights shit ain't on point, dogs.
Cole, you got a future as being a U.S. ambassador.
Ain't on point. Well, since you can be so snarky, Ben, why don't you read what Tim has to say?
Well, I was going to answer GLL's other question.
Oh, do it. Good. Oh, yeah. We probably should. Go. Favorite sports game. Go.
So I threw a link in the thing. It's a game boat attachment for the Kinect. So I'm answering both Chala's question and GLL's of being the best game and the best game peripheral.
Oh, my God.
I remember that so much. It was like for Kinect Adventures because it had a rafting game, which was kind of like just a like, hey, flail your arms one way or the other. We don't give a fuck. We already have your money kind of thing.
<That's>
but
hilarious.
Also buy an inflatable raft for your living room.
I'll say because I put a link in earlier. This is 90% of our show that people don't see is us just putting links in. Madden 2000, purely for the theme song.
What was the theme song?
By Luda.
By Ludacris.
Okay, by Luda. Okay. So I feel like it missed out because Ben immediately came in and threw it off to Luda. So. Oh, man. I have to say mine, NFL 2K5. Is fantastic. Outside of that, probably either Tiger Woods 2004 or NHL 94 for the Genesis.
Or NFL Blitz, dude.
I don't know. I didn't so much care for that. I thought it was a little bit too loosey-goosey. David, how about you?
I never really at all in any way been into sports-based games. I'm going to choose to argue that... Super Smash Bros. Is a very abstract simulation of sumo wrestling. And are you Super Smash Bros? Also, I realized I didn't answer Jala's question. So I'm going to go with the robotic operating buddy for the Nintendo.
Yeah.
Rob.
Classic.
I've dropped the link. I never actually owned one of these. However, I did own one of the two games that were made for it and spent hours trying to figure out how the heck you play this game that won't respond to your input because I didn't have some crazy robot to help.
Wait a minute, which one? Gyromite?
Yeah, I had Gyromite.
Oh, wow, that's crazy because I thought that was like shipped with it.
Yeah, I think it was, but I got the Nintendo system like secondhand with a bunch of games.
Oh, okay, yeah. So the Rob was already off into the collector's market by that point.
David Rob, somebody's Rob.
And the weird thing is, there's like one time when I somehow got it to work, and I've no idea, like, that shouldn't be possible. I've no idea what happened.
Huh.
I don't know. But yeah, no, like, so Rob really just pressed A and B on your controller. So, like, if you could discern its logic, you would probably be able to figure it out, but otherwise, huh. Yeah, no, yeah. Rob was weird, and that was, you know, like, the story is well known that was them trying to convince toy stores that this was a toy, not a video game system, but yeah. Good.
I kind of like the idea, kind of the Nintendo era idea of just, you know, trying some of this weird stuff.
Oh, yeah. You gotta try. Yeah. But let's see here. So, the
Tim
spider...
says.
Tim says. There we go. Cool. Go.
Tim says. You thought you were going to get your question answered.
Tim has two things. Tim says two things, and I'm going to go in reverse order because Tim actually filled in for me and Dennis as far as the JRPG question went. And he said, a less obvious favorite of mine is Lufia 2, Rise of the Sinistrels. I hope I'm pronouncing that right.
Yep.
Don't worry about skipping Lufia 1.
Yeah, yeah. So Lufia 2 was one that I read about in Nintendo Power and probably read that article, let's say 40 to 50 times, like their strategy guide for it. And so I like probably like played it out in so much more of an awesome way than I probably would on the SNES. So I like, even though I would love to go back to it like for WoF or something, like in some kind of weird opportunity where we could do that. But yeah, no, like Lufia 2 is one that I have fond memories of despite me never playing it.
All right. And his actual question is, can you remember any good video game quote unquote playground rumors from when you were a kid? Such as, my friend's uncle who works at Nintendo told me that if you jump 100 times in the spot and a secret character might give you 99 lives, that sort of thing. Mortal Kombat new code is real, which I did not know this.
I think you might be being facetious.
Oh.
Yeah.
You're a little too excited about that.
I know, right?
Well,
no, I could have seen Reptile, dude.
That you would be, you know, it's like, yeah, you were playing that game all that time when you were a kid, and that was in the code, and it was right there, and
yeah.
I don't know. It'd be weird.
They were doing hot coffee before it was cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. Nude codes like totally predate Grand Theft Auto San Andreas.
Yeah,
like I remember looking at like images on AOL of like Lara Croft potentially being nude, but like actually it was like some weird side boob that somebody modded in. And the image took like a half an hour to load. I was like, oh no, my mom's gonna see it. Blah. Yeah,
that's funny. The effort that it would take for someone at that point to. Well, I could probably didn't take that much effort. It's a polygon.
You have to keep the dream alive. You have to keep the dream alive. Yeah. Doritos are. You have to keep the Dorito dream alive.
I had one that wound up being true. I think you can at some point in the Mario games you can get behind like that background scenery, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. That's one where someone told me that. I was like, "You are so full of shit. There's no way." And then I actually found out. I was like, "Oh my god."
Yeah,
like for me, it was all like how to revive Eris, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, you know, you have to do this, you know, series of button presses, or you know, talk to this person after running away from so many battles, etc. And down the line, like that was very much, you know, in the 10-year-old Cole zeitgeist, right?
Nice.
Why did people care so much?
You know what? That is a question that I am still baffled by to this day, because Aerith was the perfect waifu.
Was perfect what?
Waifu, you know.
Nope, don't ruin his innocence.
Don't what?
Don't ruin his innocence.
It's the good
waifu,
right?
He doesn't know what it is.
You put it on your pillow, and she can't run anywhere, you know. See, it's your pillow waifu, you know. No, I just think that it hit it. I think that Final Fantasy VII hit enough people who are on the internet and their sexual, like... Okay, they were exposed to this, and that made their sexuality really, really weird moment that it became an object of obsession. And it trickled down to me, who was not in any way sexual at that point. Like, oh, I could keep her alive so I could have this great healer at my party. Blah. Because I'm like a total fucking dweeb at age 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There was one I heard when I was little, because I played the Beavis and Butthead game for, I think, Sega or whatever.
Oh, they were very different games. The SNES one was more of an adventure game. Go ahead.
I know, and I can't remember which one is which. I know.
Was it the one where you're trying to get your GWAR tickets back?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to get pieces of it and put it together.
Uh-huh.
And so it was my older brother and his friend like made up a story to trick me about it. But they were like, it was this really elaborate story that you could like get this teddy bear in the background and then you could sell it to somebody. And then like when you go to the GWAR concert, you could go like even beyond the back door. And then like... there is some secret area. I don't know. Yeah. So,
but it was exactly that kind of game. Like, I don't think that is somebody making something up. I think that is somebody trying to like test theories on other people, because that is an inscrutable fucking game. Like, and if that is not suggested for abject suffering by the time this episode comes out, I will be severely disappointed in you people. So, are there any other playground rumors that we're not? addressed.
I've been trying to think. I remember there were several with Pokemon
with Missing
the truck thing.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Which I feel like that one's, semi myth confirmed in that at least the truck actually exists.
Oh yeah, definitely. And like it exists. Like I probably have a ruined Pokemon Red cart with Missingno on it. But like that is more that is more, hey, this weird code remnant exists. Have fun catching all those Pokemon again, you fucking dweeb.
Older Cole is really hard on younger Cole.
Well, no, like morning Cole. Okay. So afternoon Cole is really okay. Wait a minute. Morning Cole is really upset at previous night Cole most times. Continue.
Yeah. Other than that, I don't know. I have been enjoying some of the games. I think. Most notably, like the Payday series that actually put in purposeful playground rumors that end up being true. Yeah. That's kind of interesting.
I think that breaks the spirit of it, though, because I could say the crow that takes you back to the asylum in Dark Souls, right? As one of those that turns out to be totally true.
See, these are more like Payday, the first level, like, if you, basically almost beat it and then, like, sit in the bank vault for literally, like, in excess of an hour. Like, these are things that very much were set up to be, like, anyways, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. And then the final question from Nick Basile. Says it's not the final question. We'll do this one, and then I'll give us the final one because it is in the email. Sorry, Alan. Oh. But Nick asks, I know you guys can see what items are purchased through the Amazon tip jar link. What is the strangest thing you've seen someone order?
Slicer,
like just like a shitload of them about a year ago. No. So I am the only person who has access to that information, and it's only incidental. I seriously don't pay attention to what you people buy, and I am totally not going to reveal what it is you are buying on the show. I think that the one time that I breached that rule was to say that like somebody bought a mattress. Which is totally fine. That is not like sensitive information at all. But like what that said to me was you can order a mattress on Amazon, and I think it was Prime eligible. So that person is a shrewd consumer.
And pro tip, that person was me.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Nice. The mattress I currently have in this house.
You bought through the link. Okay. So I feel totally fine because like I think I said it on an episode and I felt really bad because like that's kind of a violation of trust because like I catch some personal stuff that people buy through the corner of my eye and like there is nothing. Linked to like any particular names of anybody, so like you should not feel that you're violated. But still, like if I were to come out and say like so and so bought blah blah blah, that would be a huge violation. I want you to feel safe, right? So I feel
he trusted you, Cole.
Well, I trust. Okay, so 7 minutes of that.
So in place of that, I can share this story. When we found out we were pregnant, Jen was going through and ordering a bunch of baby stuff online.
Oh, God, that was you?
And I'm always on her to use the Amazon link. I'm like, oh, yeah, remember to use that. And so I was so paranoid that, like, I was like, oh, no, everyone's going to know now.
So, like, I was watching that come through, and I was like, oh, like, one of our listeners is going back on the thing I said earlier, like I just noticed like there was a bunch of kid stuff and I was like, oh, somebody listening is like having a new kid. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, that's so great for them. They're buying like really nice stuff for their kid. And so like all of this stuff that like stuck out to me, like I'm buying a mattress on Amazon through this link or I'm buying baby stuff on Amazon through this link. It was all people here.
Yeah, the only question revealed is people on the show.
So. Which leads me to believe that only people on this show are buying from this.
We just have horrible spending problems.
How are you guys supporting this? Like, you know that all you have to do is show up, right? Like, I don't ask anything of you aside from...
That's funny.
Yeah, but that link is duckfeed.tv/tipjar. I totally will not reveal that you're pregnant or whatever.
Well, you're kind of digging yourself a hole.
Well, okay, I will not intentionally reveal that you're pregnant, I guess. No,
that
but
it's worse.
But like where that gets cool is like where people are buying like Hawkeye. Or Why the Last Man, or Saga, or like stuff that that at least I personally recommend is like when that pops up is really cool because it's like, oh, okay, cool, that finds some purchase, and everybody who uses that, like, it kind of is this weird degree of feedback. I don't even
sure,
know.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there is one final question through email, which was sent in to us by Alan, which says, do you have a beloved game or franchise that popular opinion deems as bad, but you stick with? As I am writing this, I am loading Final Fantasy XIII Part 3 onto my Xbox. Not that those two things are related at all.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't know. As a survival horror fan, I am totally happy, like, you know, living in the 7.0 range of game ratings. Which is at the bottom of game ratings that ever get published. So so I will disqualify myself from this conversation.
I'll say Urban...
Ben, go.
I'll say Urban Chaos, the first game by Rocksteady. It was by no means a popular game because it came out at the very end of like the Xbox console life.
Yeah.
But it was super fun. And yeah. There, it's not really, it doesn't have a substantial narrative at all, but I mean, it was fun.
Yeah.
So.
You like Tokyo Jungle too, right? I conflate those two because of A, button mashers, and also Ben, so.
Yeah. Tokyo Jungle is pretty hilarious.
Pretty good. How about you, Dave?
I was going to say, I feel like this is one of those questions that as soon as I hear it, I'm like, oh, I've got a great answer for that. I just can't remember. so, like, I know there have been some, especially when Dennis, when we're roommates, had Gamefly, so we'd just get weird stuff.
Oh, Army of Two. Army of Two.
Yeah, I was about to say, on that, what I would say is Army of Two... we played the first two of them, Army of Two and then Army of Two 40th Day. And, yeah, those were both games we really enjoyed, despite them not exactly being good.
Yeah. I have to second that one. Army of Two is a phenomenal time if you can find another person to play it with.
Yeah. Co-op is kind of the balm that that eases all sins, you know.
Does the evil moral choices in that game?
Like, aren't the evil, like, aren't they just like burn all brown people? like the renegade option in that is like kill every villager, right?
Well, they're not quite that, but there's things where, like, you're under heavy fire and there's, like, an enemy you killed earlier has dropped a sniper rifle and, like, this 6-year-old kid you're escorting to safety is like, oh, I'll just run out into fire and get that for you. And you have to be like, yeah, do that or don't do that. The funny thing about that, though, is it gets through the entire game of the, like, more options being incredibly obvious, and then the final one is either like kill your teammate or blow up the city, and it's actually kind of a legitimate option because you have to kill the other player.
Kill your teammate, blow up the city, hack the planet, go.
Well, if I remember right, if you're playing the game co-op, both of you, he's like, you know, one of you kill the other or I'll blow up the city. And so both of you, you know, have the option to make that choice. And so it's got that added pressure of, you know, do I push the
button? Prisoner's
before?
Dilemma.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So it's this thing where, like, the entire game, more choices are just incredibly dumb. And then the last one, granted, like, obviously from, like, an actual moral level, like, kill what, like, China's second most populated city or kill one dude, like, who's a horrible person. But I'm, you know, from a gameplay standpoint, that's actually a fairly good moral choice in a game that otherwise is just like killing thousands of people and then fist bumping the other player.
Right. Well, it seems like a good moral choice in any situation, because one, you have to actively kill someone, and the other one, you're passively letting
granted,
people
yeah,
die.
That's,
you know, so there is a little bit of a debate there.
Yeah. I don't know that we can resolve it in the time that we have left.
Should have had a shorter brief, then we could have gotten that.
Otherwise, like, we would have gotten to the bottom. Like so much of humanity would have been sorted out. But y'all fuckers downloaded Flappy Bird and made a scene, and we had to talk about it. We're done here. Thanks, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast for that kind of shit, to talk about those things. We're done. Section break.
The credit.
Boom. Now it's time for the credits.
Which one of y'all dead motherfuckers?
So, the credits. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I'm sorry for that confrontational tone. I had to put my foot down, otherwise this episode would never end.
Intense, intense, intense.
148 all over again.
Oh my gosh.
So thank you for listening so much. We very much appreciate it. It's duckfeed.com/thelevel if you want to see a list of the episodes of the show and you know, find those various things. Look at, like, whichever one has the most interesting title, just pick it and download it. Listen, you're gonna love it, I guarantee. But otherwise, you can do the whole Facebook thing. Leave us a rating or review on iTunes. There is great stuff on the network. Just last night, as I'm recording this, I put out my my article on Sweet Home for the Hex Crank blog, which I love that game so goddamn much.
Nice.
and I like the article a lot as well. I'm very proud of it. But yeah, 2,200 words of stuff about Sweet Home. But I'm going to try and settle into like a biweekly thing. I know that I've been erratic with that, but I just love horror games so goddamn much. Yeah. But yeah, check that out. Let me know what you think. I have no podcast venue for that, so this is the closest thing. Yeah. Is there anything I'm missing, you guys?
Sleep.
Yeah, sleep. Also, tip jar. That is duckfeed.tv/tipjar. If you're going to be buying stuff off of Amazon, I will spy on you, but I will not say anything to anybody. And also, if I say anything to anybody, it's going to be to people on this show, and that is all anybody ever buys. The only people who buy shit through that link, I guess.
Only Cole and the NSA will know.
Yep.
But the NSA was going to know anyway.
Pretty
so
much. Cool. So this has been Cole Ross, your host, I guess. I am at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I am Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter.
I'm David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on Twitter.
And Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And just make sure, if you're going to wear a crown, make sure it's not vestigial. Good night.
The only appropriate theme song for a football game is Final Countdown.
Yeah. It's a touchdown. It's a touchdown, yeah. Gotta throw that ball. Gotta throw that ball real fast. It's a touchdown. It's a touchdown, yeah.
I'm now eagerly awaiting your cover of Final Countdown.
Well, I just did it. So, like, gotta be fucking satisfied with that.
It's Cole one take rocks.